Welcome to Arkansas Cooks. This is your host, Mary Tweet, and I'm here to meet and eat with Arkansas cooks, and then I tell you all about it. The food in the Arkansas Delta is a savory history. Just ask Cindy Grisham. Don't go away, you're listening to Arkansas Cooks. Good afternoon, I'm Mary Tweed, and you are listening to Arkansas Cooks. I was recently sent a book called The Savory History of the Arkansas Delta, and I was very curious when I got it. I'd never seen anything from the Arkansas Delta, and so I read it from cover to cover, and I loved it. It was a book that was written by Cindy Grisham, and she wrote it because of several conversations that she had with folks when she was in the Delta and really living in Jonesboro, going to school at ASU, and it all started with a plate of biscuits and gravy. So I tracked her down, and I could have talked to Cindy for hours. She was fascinating. She has so much history. So here is the beginning of my conversation with Cindy Grisham about the savory history of the Arkansas Delta. So today I am talking to Cindy Grisham, and I'm talking to Cindy because she has got a brand new book out as of May, actually, of this year, The Savory History of Arkansas Delta Food. And so, Cindy, you tell us in the book how this started, but I've got to hear the story from your mouth, because you started over gravy.
Started over gravy, over biscuits and gravy at H.T. Ponder's restaurant in Jonesboro, Arkansas. And I was in graduate school in the Department of Political Science, working on a master's degree. We had a class in Southern politics, and if you've listened to a lot of stories about Huey Long and Herman Talmadge and people like that, you know, you pretty much are craving Southern food after it's over. So every Tuesday afternoon, we found a place that served biscuits and gravy all day long, which is great, you know. What's better than breakfast all day long?
I can't imagine.
So my friend Bradley and I would both have just, you know, your typical sausage gravy with biscuits, and my friend Sarah had something called chocolate gravy. And I'm from the Missouri Ozarks, and chocolate gravy is not something we have there. And so I'm like, what is this? You know, and so I tried it one day, and it was okay. But I thought it was kind of a good waste of pudding and a good waste of biscuit.
Exactly.
You know, which, that's whole my whole thing. But it sort of brought up this conversation about gravy and food and the food that we eat, and grew from there. We would talk over lunch or whatever it was at 2:30 in the afternoon when we were having our biscuits and gravy. We'd talk about the foods that we ate, the foods that we grew up with. Sarah was from Central Arkansas, Bradley from Northeast Arkansas, and just kind of the traditions that came out of that. And then we go back on campus, and of course the conversation doesn't stop when you talk about food.
Everybody continues to talk.
Yeah. And the faculty members would end up coming in and sitting down and telling about, you know, their grandma's cat head biscuits and how she made them, and it had 7 cups of lard and crazy stuff like that.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, and it grew from just more than gravy to you know, holiday traditions, and you know, just grew from there.
Well, as I told you, as I was reading this book, I think you give one of the very best definitions of what the Delta is, kind of the description of the Delta. And I've always thought of the Delta, well, it's on the Mississippi, you know, mm-hmm. it's the land on the Mississippi. Mm-hmm. But you described it a little differently. How did you describe it in here?
Well, it's actually what we think of as the Delta is the Mississippi Alluvial Plain, which is kind of the river valleys, the lowlands. It actually starts in Southern Illinois, which we don't think of Southern Illinois as being the Delta, but there's Delta land in Southern Illinois, coming down through Southeast Missouri and through Louisiana and Mississippi. And it's the land that is formed by alluvial processes. You know, it the river comes up, it spreads the
river water,
the silt and things like that over the land. The river goes down, and then we grow in it. And so it's basically just a river. It's a bigger description than that. But there's various sections
right.
of the Delta. What what's actually the Mississippi Delta is in Louisiana. What people generally think of as the Mississippi Delta is the Yazoo Delta,
right,
over
right.
in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And what's in Arkansas is a totally different kind of the Delta, but it's still part of the same land.
Right.
And so...
And lots of trade long ago happened on the Mississippi.
Absolutely.
So you had a lot of... You had a lot of industry on the river. Mm-hmm. And what's so interesting, I think, about the Arkansas Delta is there were lots of poor migrant workers, a lot of farmers, a lot of, you know, sharecroppers, mm-hmm. Because that was rich soil and they were trying to farm and trying mm-hmm. to make a living. But then they also were kind of desperate with food. So you
right.
had a lot of gravy and biscuits and, you
cornbread
know, staples
and
cornbread
yeah.
and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. What people don't really realize is the north, especially northeast Arkansas, was probably the last frontier in America settled.
Yeah,
because
you said
it was
that.
A swamp, and it was full of these wonderful, you know, trees, hardwood forest, but no one could get them out because everything was underwater. And there's lots of, you know, talk about how it was under, you know, was it part of, you know, remnant of the 1811, 1812 earthquakes? Was it just the river geology itself? How did it all form? I don't know. I'm not a geologist. But, you know, it was swampy and it was a mess and no one could get in and out of it. And about 10 months out of the year, it was mud or water. And no one left, you know, they didn't come too far in off the river or they were up on Crowley's Ridge. And that
mm-hmm,
was the only
mm-hmm.
populated area. People just didn't get out there. So when the railroad is expanding to the west, they're looking at all those hardwood forest in northeast Arkansas, and that's the last great stand of hardwood forest left. And so they find, you know, say, we're going to go get it. So they start building these railroads through the Delta. And if you're going through the Delta, you realize that the railroad tracks are all generally up about 15 feet up in the air,
mm-hmm.
Especially between the Mississippi and Crowley's Ridge. And they had to do that because that was the high water mark. In order to keep the trains moving, you had to be above the water
right.
all the time. And they started cutting these trees out. So the Delta, 120 years ago, was nothing but sawmills and
yeah.
timber cutters
yeah.
and things like that. And it really, I mean, really, they didn't clear the Delta completely until after World War II.
Wow.
And, but as they cleared it, they realized they have this lovely soil that's rich and deep, very deep, and that it's great for growing that most fickle of crops, cotton. Which can either make you or break you from year to year. And in order to grow cotton, you have to have lots of labor. It's not something that, you know, you come in and you make your living on 80 acres of cotton. You just don't.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have more and more land. And so you have lots of sharecroppers. And I would hear stories from people, older people, who would say, we weren't allowed to grow a garden. You know, we had cotton right up to the house, so the only thing we had to eat was what the landlord gave us through...
Well, they shared. They would get a...
Well, they would get it. They would get a portion.
A
yeah,
portion, yeah.
Yeah, and you were either a sharecropper or a tenant farmer. And if you were a tenant farmer, it generally meant that you owned your own equipment. You had your own mule,
mm-hmm,
you had
mm-hmm.
your own plow and things. If you didn't have that, you were a sharecropper, so you got a smaller proportion of your crop. But out of it, you were supplied food and essentials.
Yeah, and I read that in here. I thought that was really interesting, and it would come out at the end.
Come out at the end, right. And on March 15th, that would be furnish day. And that's when you started drawing your furnish. You started drawing your seed and your food and things like that from the landlord. And then you would live out of the commissary, which generally was on the farm.
Right.
In some places it wasn't. In Taranza, where I was working, there was basically, up until the Depression, there was one store in town who acted sort of as the commissary for all the planters. And then when the Depression came along, everybody sort of split up and took over their own. But most places had their own commissary. And the planter would provide you cornmeal, beans, lard, molasses. I mean, that's kind of, maybe salt pork, things like that. Right,
yeah.
That was with the staples. And, you know, if you were in a place where you had a store rather than a commissary, you could buy other things, but you were going to have to pay for that at the end of the year. So you either had to be really careful about what you bought so you'd have enough money to pay out at the end of the year, or you went in debt and stayed in debt year after year after year after year after year.
Yeah, it was a hard life.
It was a really hard life. And so, and unlike, you know, the Ozarks where I was from, where people forage, you know, this whole urban forage movement now is kind of funny to me. It's what people always did it.
Yeah, really.
From, you know, you go out, you pick blackberries, you pick poke salad, stuff like that.
Yeah, anything you find.
Right, and you can't, you preserve it, you do whatever. And but you really couldn't do that in the Delta because everything was in cotton.
Yeah. I read, it was funny in here, at the very end of your book, somebody says, if I could have cooked cotton, I would have cooked cotton.
Yeah.
She could cook anything. She could even cook that cotton.
Yeah, well,
and she talks about Crisco, or
right.
cottonseed oil,
right.
which was the first Crisco, which is, and you have a lot of stories in here about Huey Long, which I'm fascinated by Huey Long.
Oh,
anyway.
He's a fascinating guy.
Yeah,
he is.
So, I mean, you had a lot of stories about how the first Crisco was really not Crisco. It was something,
it was cottonseed oil.
Cottonseed oil.
Hydrogenated cottonseed oil or something
yeah.
like that. And it's, yeah, it was, that's what it was made of. And so, really, at that time, you could cook cotton. That was a lease at the feedlot in Caraway, which is a great restaurant.
Yeah, Cotoline.
Cotoline. Yeah, Cotoline. That Huey Long was a Cotoline salesman. That's how he met his wife. She won.
Isn't that
a,
crazy?
She won a cooking contest using Cotoline. A baking contest.
Yeah, that was fascinating to me. And, you know, people will still say that they will never, I know cooks who will not bake biscuits or pie crust without Crisco.
No, that's what they grew up doing.
Yeah, I mean, they all say, well, you know, do you ever use butter? Or
Nope.
I use Crisco.
Has to be Crisco.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then, like, I have my professor whose grandmother always used lard. And when he got married, he told me this great story. He said, I got married, and I said, I don't care if you learn to cook anything else. If you can just learn to cook my grandma's cathead biscuits, I will be the happiest man ever. So went out over the weekend to see Grandma make the biscuits, and she took a notebook and she was going to make notes on how to do it because Grandma didn't have a written recipe.
Of course not.
She just did it. And they got back home and he said, well, did you get the recipe? And she said, but it's going to kill us. And he said, why? And she's like, it's got like 7 cups of lard in it.
7 cups of lard is a lot
it's
of lard.
It's a lot of lard. But she made a lot of biscuits because she was cooking for, you know, people, the whole family, and then any other workers that they had,
sure.
you know, helping on the farm. So, and cat head biscuits, you know, they're the size of a cat's head, and you have lots of them, and everybody's got to have at least one. So you need, it's going to take a lot of lard to make all those biscuits. But
so you ended up really, I mean, you started with the gravy, but you ended up really researching a lot about the foods in the Delta,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was really fascinating because, you know, there are a lot of these foods are comfort foods for people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Biscuits, gravy, you know, things. I'd always heard about pot liquor, but I never, your definition in here of what, you
what
know, the greens are cooked
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and pot liquor, you know, my grandmother would always say what this guy in here said, that's where the vitamins are.
It is.
Yeah.
Because they would cook it to death. And it's not just the greens. It's any vegetable. It's the juice of any vegetable.
Yeah. Corn, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you cook it to death. And they would do that. You know, you're going to the field, all hands on deck. You're going out to the field to chop cotton. You put the greens on the back of the stove and you walk out and you leave them. And they cook low and slow all morning. And nobody wants to be in that house cooking.
Right.
Over the stove with, you know, an Arkansas summer. No one wants to be in there.
No.
So that's how you're going to cook it, low and slow and long time. And, and so you're going to drink that stuff at the bottom because everything's cooked out of it. You know, you've just got this mush, you know. And
so talk to me a little bit about how you went around this. I mean, you started with the biscuits, but did you pick places to interview or how did you look for kind of how to put the book together?
Well,
because you do focus a lot on the north part of the state.
I was in northeast Arkansas. Like I said, I'm from south central Missouri and came down to Jonesboro to do a PhD in heritage studies and worked in one of the university-owned museums at Taranza.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, Taranza has a population of 700 and there's one restaurant. And if you didn't bring your lunch, you know, with you, that's where you're going to eat. And so it was just kind of a thing of getting used to the fact. And I was a police officer in my previous life, so, you know, eating in small places out of the way on the road, that's what you do.
That was your idea of a good
time,
right?
Yeah, well, that's what you did. You know, that's how you figure out what's going on. You stop and eat and talk to the locals, and they're the ones who know everything that's happening. So that was kind of It was, you know, I didn't really, there was really no plan for this. It was just something that was fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. And as I went along, I kept thinking, you know, this could be a really neat story, really neat book. And when I went into it, the whole goal was, because we had talked about gravy so much, all the different kinds of gravy. And we kind of go back to that chocolate gravy thing. There was a lady in Marjorie, Regina Clay, called Granny Clay, which makes me laugh because she doesn't look like a granny to me. But she makes a chocolate gravy mix that she would sell in our museum gift store. And people who were from Arkansas knew what it was. And people who weren't from Arkansas said, what in the world? Because people think chocolate gravy and they're thinking the savory gravy. And it really is, you know, like chocolate pudding.
It is exactly what it is.
And they didn't know what it was. And so they would tell me about all these other gravies that they had grown up eating. And I'd hear about tomato gravy and pot liquor gravy. And, Mary Ann Arnold over in Marjorie telling me about Grandmother Ritter's sour gravy. Which it was, she cooked tongue and sour gravy, and I'm like, what in the heck? And it was made with vinegar. It was,
really?
and if she had lemons, she would use lemons, but if she didn't, she would use vinegar. And she was German, so
sure, that makes
naturally,
sense.
You know. And so, I mean, I'm hearing all these stories about all these gravies, and I'm thinking, I'm gonna write a gravy book, talk about gravy. And the whole plan was, I wanted to have the cook make her gravy. Talk to her about the story behind the gravy, because it generally came from grandma, whatever, some hard time story that they could, you know, concocted, and take photos of it, and that was what it was going to be. And it sort of morphed into something else, you know, talking about all the different kind of things. And then when I actually pitched the book to the publisher, they're like, well, what we'd really like you to do is do a food history with the recipes. And I'm kind of like, okay, and we need it done by March. And this was October. So, yeah, never do that again. And it's just sort of like my way of trying to pull everything together at the last minute and go, oh, gosh, well, I've got to talk about that. And I've got to talk about that. So
it made for an interesting history. This is the savory history of Arkansas Delta food. And I'm with Cindy Grisham, and she is talking about the gravy that started all this. You know, I love in here when they talk about the French bechamel sauce, and the woman goes to the cooking class, the French cooking class, and she said, oh, we call this gravy.
Exactly, and I've been cooking it my whole life. She was so excited, yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was a great story. But, you know, I think that that is a lot of where we get, you know, I grew up with a Sunday meal when my mother would make a pot roast, and we always had brown gravy with our pot roast.
Right.
And when I moved to Arkansas, and I always liked gravy, I thought, well, this is kind of the best stuff on the plate. So when I moved to Arkansas and I found this thing called white gravy, I thought, I was fascinated with white gravy. And you put it on a biscuit, that sounds great. My mother would put it on toast.
Right.
She would make chip beef gravy on toast. And yeah, this was kind of the poor man's meal. Oh gosh, what do I have? Let me throw all this stuff together.
Exactly.
And you know, make it tasty. Throw it on some toast and we'll call it dinner.
Yeah, and sometimes you'd see it with hamburger, with ground beef. You
know? Right, exactly.
Yeah, just do it that
same
way.
Thing.
Same thing. Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also loved in here when you said, well, you had tomato gravy and you said, we called that pasta sauce.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what was really, I think, probably the most fascinating thing about Delta food to me was people from the outside, they look at Arkansas and especially they look at the Delta and they think, it's pretty one note, you know, poor folks, poor flatland folks who, you know, beans. They eat beans and cornbread, that's
and
it, you know, that's what they eat. And when you look at the influences on Delta cooking, you know, Southern cooking pretty much is Native American. It's corn. It's beans, it's squash. I mean, that's your main influence. Then you got African American stuff coming in, you know, things from Africa influencing it as well. But then in the Delta, you look at these towns and you realize that at one point you had Chinese merchants and you had Italian immigrants and you had entire towns where, you know, the business district was Lebanese or Syrian or you know, just who knows where they're going to be from. And there's big Jewish populations in every town. They're Greeks, they're Germans, people coming from everywhere because it was a boom town.
Right.
And all of these people come in and they're bringing their traditions with them. But at the same time, they can't get what they needed to do the food the way they've always done it. So
right.
they're adapting using bear, you know.
Possum, exactly. squirrel, whatever.
They're using whatever is available and making Italian food Delta food.
Right.
And so it is such a hodgepodge of cultures.
You know, that's one of the reasons I started Arkansas Cooks was because I said, you know, it's so, to me, the food in Arkansas was so interesting because it wasn't Tex-Mex like you have in Texas. It wasn't, you know, Cajun food like you have in, we didn't have our one, people would say, isn't it catfish? And they'd say, no, that's Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what we had was this really eclectic kind of mix of all sorts of different kinds of food.
Absolutely.
And that may be the same in every state, but I think it's so unique to Arkansas.
I really do.
And
I think, you know, as I've traveled around, yeah, you do find the thing that's like, this is the iconic food of
the state of whatever.
Yeah, my better half's from New Hampshire, and we go up there, and he's like, oh, you got to have this, you got to have this, because this is New Hampshire food.
Right.
And he's right, and it's everywhere. When you come to Arkansas, there really isn't anything that's, you know, that is Arkansas that says this is Arkansas food. Because I looked, I'm thinking, what is Arkansas food? Is there one dish that is Arkansas? And, you know, honestly, it may be chocolate gravy. Because everywhere I'm looking for stuff on chocolate gravy, it all traces
back to Arkansas.
Yeah, because they'll be in California and they'll say, I used to eat chocolate gravy at my grandma's house in Arkansas.
Isn't that funny?
So it may be chocolate gravy.
That's funny.
It is the one thing, or chicken spaghetti. It could be chicken spaghetti.
Or cheese dip, you know, because it
could
was
be
created.
Cheese dip, yeah, but again, I don't I mean, cheese dip, I think, again, is fairly localized.
It's totally Central Arkansas. It is.
And that's not something you're going to see a lot of. You see more tamales.
Yeah.
And the Delta.
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting when I was working down in southern Arkansas. There, you know, near Greenwood and in Greenville are all these Italian places because of the Italian immigrants that were down there.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating.
It is. And, you know, there was Leroy Percy, who was a Mississippi state senator. He owned Sunnyside Plantation in Chico County, Arkansas, and brought in a group of Italian immigrants to work his plantation, decided he would rather use the Italians than the African Americans, and the Italians didn't like him any better than the African American workers did.
Because he probably treated them the same, right?
Yeah, he did. It was not a good thing. This was not what we thought. It was not what we signed up for. So, and I mean, they primarily left in Tawny Town up in northwest Arkansas was settled by the majority of those people who left that farm.
And went up.
And went up to northwest Arkansas. And then another group went up into central Missouri around St. James, a little town called Rosati. But there were other families that stayed in the area around Greenville, Mississippi, around Lake Chico, moved on up. I ran into several Italian descendants of those people in Martree, in Tyranza, in all those little towns up there. And, you know, again, you go into those towns and you see Massanelli's grocery store, or in Tyranza they had Joe Hong's grocery. You know, I mean, everything was so...
It was almost international.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
It was so international. And it doesn't look that way now, although you can still see remnants of it, you know, little bits and pieces of things still around. But it's just sort of all melded into one big...
Well, and I do think that so much of the time when you go into the little cafes like Tyranza or in Caraway or wherever you have home cooking.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not people that get stuff off the Cisco truck and, they know where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
They know where that came from and they've been cooking it the same way. I was in Crossett not long ago. And eating breakfast, a lovely breakfast at this downtown breakfast place, and I think it was called Country Vittles. I can't remember the name of it, but all of a sudden on our table appear these two cat head cinnamon rolls, and she said, "I just made those. I thought you might want one." I said, "Well, I shouldn't have one, but I do want one because they were gorgeous. They're beautiful, and they tasted like heaven." I mean, she just brought them out.
Exactly, and Elise does that at Caraway. That's what she does. You order whatever. You know, you walk in and go, okay, I want this. And she brings you that, but she's also bringing out bowls of other things. And here's a plate of sliced tomatoes. We just picked these this morning. Or here's this, or here's that. And it's like, I don't need dessert, and I certainly don't eat three desserts, but she just keeps bringing you food, and it really, yeah, that really is the thing. It's just...
I think it's that hospitality, though, don't you,
for
so much of it?
Well, it is that, and with her, so much, food is love to her, and she'll tell you that, food is love, and if I love you, I'm bringing you stuff.
Isn't that funny?
You know, she's in Caraway. Caraway was hit by a tornado last week. Went right down Main Street, did not damage the restaurant, but pretty much made a mess of everything else. And she's out there the very next day frying catfish for everybody who's there helping clean up. And that's just her. She had candles on the tables because she had no electricity, but she's bringing people in and feeding them. And that's just the way she is. The ladies down at Taranza, you know, they're sisters.
Oh, the poor old dirt farmer, he's lost all his corn. And now where's the money to pay off his loan? He lost all his corn, can't pay off his loan. He lost all his corn. Well, the poor old dirt farmer, he only grows stone.
We're back. I'm Mary Tweed, and this is Arkansas Cooks. You can find out more about Cindy Grisham and her book, The Savory History of the Arkansas Delta, on my webpage at arkansascooks.com. Now, if you're interested in writing me, you can do that too at mary@arkansascooks.com. I love to get mail from people. It's always fantastic. Well, that's all the time we have today for Arkansas Cooks. Thanks for tuning in. I want to thank Cindy Grisham. And you can find out about her book on my website. But next week, we find out more about the history of the food in the Delta. Can't wait. I also want to thank Travis Hill. He makes me sound so good. This is Mary Tweet reminding all you Arkansas cooks, life is way too short to eat bad food. So only eat good food. Eat it with great people, people that you love. It'll taste so much better.